What's on your mind?
So what's on my mind? That's a wonderful, that's such a great open-ended question. What's on my mind? COIs is on, centers of influence is on my mind, growth is on my mind. Something else was, I've got a couple of individuals who are unreliable, as far as scheduling meetings and showing up on time and for those meetings. They happen to be the children of quite wealthy, clients. So it's the next generation thing. So, just thinking of ways to bring that home and have that time not be wasted necessarily, or find some utility or value in it. So one of the things that I've been thinking about this weekend was, just the utility of money, number one, right? Utility of wealth. What's it there for? What's it good for? How can it, that's one thing. And then value of time. So one of the things that I thought, how do I bring home that, and I was trying to think of out of the box ways to remind clients of calls, but then I thought, you know what? I think I'm coming at it from the wrong side. Maybe I should be sending a handwritten card saying, sorry, we missed you at our scheduled call on such and such day. We had emailed you a week prior on this day. Obviously this clearly isn't working as a way to remind you. Can you please let us know how we can do better? Last line being, to make sure that there was some, to ensure that this hour wasn't wasted, I've donated $100 to the food bank or something like that. I don't know. I'm just spitballing ideas here. Just thinking out loud.
Tell me about the client. Tell me, what's the net worth? How old are they?
Sure. Yeah. So it's actually, ironically, it's the client who has just tells me about with the accountant. So, net worth is high. Net worth is the parents. See, this is the thing. The parents are, 14 million.
So the parents are good clients. They attend. They're good.
They pay me and they show up.
How old are the children?
The children are, 39, 40.
And they're working and they're busy and they don't show up. Yeah. And do they have millions with you or?
No.
How much do they have with you?
$100,000.
And how often do you, schedule them?
Quarterly.
And you know what?
Hasn't shown up for a single quarterly call.
Yeah.
Four attempts, no connections.
You might consider a family meeting. Yeah. A virtual family meeting. Not because you, this is very common, by the way, a virtual family or a family meeting. It's really, it's good. It depends on the client and how much the client wants the kids to know about what's going on. Yeah. I will leave that up to you and them to decide whether that's a value, but that would be, something that would be of help.
Right.
That would get them engaged and keep the parents engaged, and everybody would think you were a hero if you pulled it off properly. Because everybody feels better when they're better informed of what's going on.
Right.
Would I worry about a child that didn't show up that had $100,000? No. Would I make sure that the parents knew that I was calling them? Yes.
Right.
Not to, And I wouldn't even turn them in for not showing up. I would simply tell them that we do call them and schedule appointments quarterly with your children.
Right.
But we do recognize they're busy.
But we recognize they're busy.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. But otherwise, yeah. I wouldn't.
Because that's the risk is that, I can't go to mom and dad and say that, your child is not picking up the phone.
No.
And not showing up. Because then that undermines the trust with the child right there, right? They don't want, I can't run to mommy and dad.
You can't.
Anymore, right.
And if they don't want to talk and they don't want to pay attention to their 100 grand, who cares? Yeah. It's, you're doing it as a favor to them. They choose not to recognize it. Keep doing it. And.
I need to be there. If mom and dad get hit by a bus, I want the assets to stay is the other thing.
I know, but you know what? You can't make people be good citizens. You can encourage them, mm-hmm. but if they want to go to prison, they're going.
Cool. All right. It's a good one. So virtual family meeting, maybe. I don't know if that's going to work in this case, but that's a good thing for me to put in my toolkit as far as thinking about the scenario.
I think if people are, especially if kids aren't paying attention, but they're of majority and you've done some estate planning and the clients are willing to share that estate planning with the kids, then a virtual meeting is a really good idea.
Right.
Because parents don't often talk about this stuff and kids, they want to know.
Yep.
So they'll come to that meeting.
That's true. Yeah. When they know mom and dad are rich, they'll show up at that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's a nice, tool to have in the toolkit for sure. Beyond that, you know, there's not a lot else on my mind, Rob, you know?
Do these parents give their children money? It doesn't sound like they much.
Not a significant amount, no.
Have they done any estate planning?
Yeah, yes. Short answer, yes. Long answer, it's still a bit of a ragtag. So we have done a wealth plan for them. Getting it presented in the manner that we'd like it presented has been a challenge. But yes, we have captured the information and they have updated wills and we have understanding of how they want assets distributed and things like that. So yes, short answer. Long answer, not as good as it could be.
Where does estate taxes hit you guys?
It's not, excuse me. It's nowhere near as onerous as it is for you guys. So how estate taxes hit us is there's probate expenses, which would be, so when your will goes through the courts, it gets what we call probated, depending on where you live, different probate fees. So that's kind of step one. Step two is so assets can transfer between spouses. That's fine. Yeah. So it's really the last to die spouse that we're concerned about in this scenario or in any scenario like that. And in that eventuality, we have account types called RRSPs. It'd be similar to, I'm not sure if it's your 401k or your Roth IRA or whatever that scenario is, but it's, you know, when you put money in, you get a tax deduction and then it grows tax deferred until you retire and start taking money out. After you pass away, that is deemed to have come into your income. So it's, let's imagine you have $500,000 in this account, you die and you're the last to die. It's as though you had $500,000 in personal income in that year.
That year.
Yeah. So there's that scenario. Yeah. In 1 year. And then after that, you know, if you have corporations can continue to exist beyond the, passing the individual, but it would depend on, of course, your, the cost of your shares and things like that, right? So if you have a personal corporation and your cost based on your share is a dollar and the corporation's worth 100,000, then there's capital gains that need to be paid in that scenario. So there are, well, you know, there are insurance.
Yeah. You get a step, you don't get a step up then in basis like we do.
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah. That's pretty nice. When you die, your stock gets a step up from current price or 60 days later, whichever is, more. So, right. So, you know, that's why people die with their big capital gains.
Yeah. We, when you die, it's as though you have triggered every capital gain. So on the date of your passing, it's as though you sold every security you own.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and what's the tax? Is it 50% or?
It's, so for capital gains, it's half of the capital gain is brought into your taxable income. So if you have a $50,000 of that 100 is taxable.
And that would be at your current rate?
Call it a 25% tax.
Yeah. Cause it'd just, be at you know, your
easy
current
math
rate.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So it's, there's stuff, but it's not terrible. Yeah.
No, and you know, you can do things like put money in trust and things like that. And, well, and that was, so in this scenario, Rob, and we don't have to get too far into the weeds on this, but what I did with the accountant right before I jumped on the call with you is she said, you know, we can, this is kind of, it helps defer taxes and stuff. And I said, well, defer for who? For how long? For the next generation? For this generation? What's the flexibility in the structure that you're contemplating, right? Because all too often we get caught up with the here and now, as opposed to, you know, 5-10 years in the future. You know, if all of a sudden you lose flexibility in your money or you lose flexibility in your, in changing planning or reacting to new regimes, sometimes that can be a massive problem. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's better to just pay your taxes and have the cash.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. That's, I had one client who used a, well, I had one client who showed up on what we call the Panama Papers. I'm not sure if you guys have that as well. I had one client show up there, but it was nothing too crazy other than property ownership. but he certainly didn't like his name showing up. I had another client who hasn't shown up on any lists and he's, you know, totally above board, but he did have a trust set up in a tax haven, country and, he lost sleep over it. It really bugged him. And so he unwound it. He paid a ton of money to unwind it, but it was at the end of the day, it wasn't worth it. The best line I've heard from a very, very wealthy and successful individual was that our tax regime is the Canada Revenue Agency, the CRA, as opposed to the IRS. And this individual said, last time I checked, the CRA was not a registered charity. And there's lots of ways that you can donate money to offset your tax bill. You know, if it's really that important to you to not pay
right.
taxes, why not support
I do that.
Charities to, you know, yeah.
You can only get up to 60% of your adjusted gross income, except during COVID, and then it was 100% if you gave cash.
Yeah.
So I'll end up giving enough that I won't have any income this year.
Right. Well, we can do 75% in, up to 75% of your income in Canada. And you can appreciate donate appreciated securities without triggering the capital gain. So if you've got a security that went from $1 to $100, you can donate that, get the full value of market value of it, not trigger the capital gain. These are wonderful ways to reduce.
Yeah, that's the same. That's the same. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people don't, we we'd use trust to avoid probate because it can be expensive, and especially in states. You know, so you use trust to avoid probate, and then you just title things properly, and they flow past probate. They never go to probate. You know, the majority of the estate, because the lawyers collect a lot of money on, you know, on probate.
Yeah.
So we try and, you know, they're sort of in a conflict of interest, you know, like if they do the planning properly, there's no probate and therefore you don't get paid, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's, we would do the same thing with titling things properly, naming beneficiaries and all of those things. Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting.
How's your performance been up there this year?
Performance in what sense? Performance in my business growing? Portfolio performance has been good. It's not where, I have to be careful how I measure myself. So I'm a portfolio manager. So I run discretionary portfolios, and then I also have, you know, the legacy business, which is self-directed, by clients. So my core 70-30 balanced portfolio is up, 14% year to date, which is fine. It's trailing, you know, 100% equity, but of course it is, because it's not 100% equity. So performance has been okay. Yeah. And that's something I still beat myself up over that. Absolutely. Performance has been okay. And I've made some tweaks and adjustments and, in process that's ultimately going to, really move the needle, on performance. So I'm excited about that. Performance has been okay. Hasn't been a major issue. I think what it is myself just always, saying I should have caught that. I should have did this. I should have caught.
I know. I'm the same. I'm like, yeah, I don't care if I did 38% last year. If I'm trailing this year, I'm like,
why didn't you do 40?
Well, I'm like, you know, but Rob, your 3-year and your 5-year is really good. Yeah. I don't care. I'm firing myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know if I can share my screen with you. I'm going to see if I can. So I built a strategy that I've back tested, and, I want to show you the, let's see here, share screen. I need to change. Oh, I'm not going to be able to. Shoot. Maybe I'll try.
Let me see.
Cause I know you'd be really interested in this. I can share my screen. I just have to log into the system on a different tab. So it's just going to take me a second here. But, long story short, Morningstar bought a company called CPMS, and, CPMS, they are, just a data aggregator, a data company. So it's similar to a Bloomberg, something like that. But what CPMS allows me to do is backtest strategies, which can create a lot of problems. You can get in a lot of trouble optimizing for a backtest as opposed to optimizing for the real world. I've brought in some Morningstar research into it, and their economic moat. So if you think big, boring, Buffett style, management, you're looking for companies that have wide, durable, competitive moats, and then some aspect of, price sensitivity, which, you know, when Morningstar runs their, their star ranking on, individual equities is based on a discounted cash flow. That's one of the inputs into their process. So from that standpoint, it's, pretty appealing. But, I should be doing more logging in, less talking. Okay, back to homepage. What I managed to put together was a portfolio that 10 stock US portfolio, has 25% turnover in any given year. Less volatility than the S&P 500, and has beaten it over every time horizon since 2004. And just buys, I've selected the wrong country here. I want USA. So I keep talking, but I'm having troubles here.
Ten stocks?
Yeah. Well, cause I'm also buying 10 Canadian stocks. So I'm building a 20 stock portfolio, right?
I think you guys actually outperformed us this year, didn't you?
We did. Yeah. We did. HJ.
You had a big year. It's because of oil, I think.
Yeah, we had a commodity. The commodity rally has really helped. Mind you, so I've got my Canadian model that I'm transitioning to. Doesn't hold any financials or resources. It massively outperforms the Canadian market as well. So here I'm gonna share this screen with you here, Rob. All right, so you should be able to see. Do you see my mouse moving around?
I do.
And a resize. Now it says resizing.
Yeah.
So now you've got some numbers here. So what this is this is my U.S. growth portfolio. So this is here. What I'll do is I'll generate the PDF on this. So it's got a since inception of 14.4%, Sharpe ratio of 0.9, here we can see, you know, 2011 up 9.3, 2012 up 12, 13 up 33.7, 14 up 14.1, 15 up 4.8. Underperformed in 2016 materially, right? Up 1.6 versus 12, but 37, 5 versus a minus 4.
That's big.
40, you know, if we look at, beta 0.86, Sharpe ratio 0.93, max drawdown 35%, and this is back tested to 2004, right?
Do you have the upside downside capture ratio?
I do on what I can do is,
because you're going to be high, you're going to be you know 110 and 85 or something.
Statistics. I think this is what I want. Is this going to give me up, down? No. Best, worst? No. Maybe it's in here. This is percentage of times. So this is, when I'm looking at this is of 71 months of 145 up months. This, you know, beat the market 48.97 versus 51 in the failure side of things. But no, I don't have the upside downside capture apparently, on this.
That's in a very effective marketing tool if you can find it.
Yeah. And maybe it is on this PDF, but
because
anyways,
my impression is that especially particularly in that 2017 was that, you were up and it was down 4.
Yeah.
That was a huge spread. That's 8% or 9%.
And one of the things to, consider here is that this is, unfortunately what we're looking at here. This is, the year end isn't December 31st on these numbers. So like if you go back and look at your S&P 500 in 2018, I don't think the S&P 500 finished the year down 4.4. That's just a function of when I ran the back test. So,
okay.
You know, I can adjust the back test, to give that. And this, it's the same result is effectively what it is, but, Ultimately, so that's something that, that I'm pretty excited about, is that I've got something that, owns big, boring companies, right? And so here's the portfolio: Pepsi, MasterCard, Microsoft, Home Depot, KLA Corporation, Eli Lilly, S&P, Moody's, Amazon. Chinieri was the most recent addition, which makes sense when you think about liquefied natural gas going around the world and what, right, what's happening. So then I've got my buy list here. So I can, what I do is the portfolio is it's reviewed monthly, but this is my buy list and here's my criteria. So economic moat, or sorry, financial health, according to Morningstar, economic moat. So if they have a 5-star, that means they have a wide economic moat. Quarterly earnings momentum, are the earnings going up? Quarterly cash flow momentum, trailing reinvestment rate, are they trying to grow their business? Price change on 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. So there's a momentum screen there. Market cap. So I want companies that are greater than 4.8 billion. And then are they within the top three deciles of their 52-week high. So what this is, it's this C plus here is saying of all the companies in the, I'm screening from the Russell 1000. That's my universe on this. It's then looking at the Russell 1000 and saying, what are the percentage of companies that are, within down from their 52-week high, if you will. Now I'm not screening for companies that are down from their 52-week high in a sense. I want companies that are near their 52-week high, meaning that something is good is going on as opposed to broken.
Right.
Companies. And then trailing ROE, and then Morningstar rank of 3 or better. So a Morningstar rank of 3 means that a company is fairly valued as opposed to overvalued, right? So then and I'm just turning into a sales pitch for this whole thing, but I can click through and I can see a quick take on Chinieri, and I can see Morningstar's research on this, right? So coming through, so I can see that they've got a fair value of $104 on Chinieri. And you know, I can go through and look at competitors, I can look at what Bears and Bulls say and why they have a moat ranking on it, and I can look at its valuation and such. So it's a very powerful tool. It's something that helps because I'm an analytical guy and I'm a process guy, and I want that. This helps me for sure. So yeah, this is what's going on in the background. And, so when you ask about, performance, I think it's about to get a lot better. And
how do you,
I think I have it.
How do you incorporate your own research into this, or don't you?
So what I do is, I've got, so the next, after I find a buy, right, then I've got S&P Capital IQ. So from there, I can look at, I've got research from, Value Line, JP Morgan, Morningstar on there. So that's the next step, is I look at it and say, okay, do I actually want to own Chinieri? What's the story here? And, then I can dig into it and see, okay, well, Value Line's got Chinieri is ranked highest for timeliness. The stock holds about average appreciation potential. Still quarterly results have been volatile, blah, blah, blah. So that's the next step. So first step is it on the buy list there? And second step is I need to have some sort of story to tell about the stock, right? About the company, I should say. But that's what that looks like.
It's good.
So it's pretty cool stuff. The reason why I'm going into it with you like this is because you're a stock guy, right? So if I can give you some stock ideas, you know, and these are all big borings. So these are ones you could buy, look at buying right now. Carlyle Group is interesting, actually.
Yeah. The private equity companies are popping up. KKR, Blackstone, you know, they're popping up. I'm seeing them in some of the portfolios that managers manage for me.
So
and they were they just didn't have enough. There wasn't enough consistent, you know, they didn't spit out enough deals to make them show up. You know, they were more of a, every 5 years they'd show earnings.
Yeah. On the Canadian side of things, I don't know how you are for time, Rob. It's 12. We've been going for 42 minutes. I'm good to go if you are.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just going to show you the Canadian side. So this, this software is only available to, only available to advisors. So it's for Canadian data. I pay, it's about $1,100 for both Canadian and US, $1,100 a month, $13.5 a year. So it only works if you can scale it, right? For an expense for an advisor. But,
are you going to be selling your services to other FAs that don't care about doing this?
No. So the way that would look is, they would, if somebody didn't want to do any portfolio management, but they still wanted to bring in clients and things like that, they would just have to join my team would be the short way of saying it, right? And be an associate. So on the Canadian side of things, I don't know if you can see this. I don't know why the screen is smaller like this, but, on the Canadian side of things, 16% compound per annum, higher turnover though, 41% turnover. If I 1.2 sharp ratio, and I'll get the PDF up here in a second. So
nice. That looks very professional, doesn't it, huh?
It's pretty incredible stuff here. So, here's my downside deviation. But I don't know exactly how to interpret that specific figure, but max drawdown at 24% versus 43.
Yeah, on the it Canadian looks like market, you're right? beating the benchmark in downside deviation.
Yeah. And then, you know, you, big win here in 2015 and 2012. So the market or benchmark's down 3.6. I'm up 12.
Yeah, that's huge.
Market down 8.7. I'm up 29. But what that comes from is not owning financials and not owning resources because we are so overweight in Canada.
Yeah. You're like a big mutual fund that owns natural resources.
Yeah. So
let me go back to that question about, because it's very big. Like I met a guy here, who just joined our club in Florida and he has 600 financial advisors that hire him to manage money. Other Merrill Lynch financial advisors. So he's got a very big business. Raj Bhatia, I've mentioned before, maybe in Chicago. Yeah. He manages FA's money, you know, but he's got a lot of client money for other FAs. And he just makes a deal. You can't do that. Can't you do that?
Okay. So what is that? Okay. So, no, I don't think I could, like, they could pay me for my.
Yeah. You my split the business. It's a split account. So I just gave Raj some money, but I kept my financial advisor in Indianapolis, but I gave Raj the money to manage for my retirement account. And he'll get 35% of the fees generated from that account. And my financial advisor will keep the rest.
Might be able to do something like that. To be honest, it's never.
He's got $600 million in money managed for other FAs. My point is that look, you got a pretty good you got a model there that you put some work into, and you're paying some fees, and you like it, and you're good at it. So you're gonna out, and you've got a track record. Other FAs do not want to do that. They just buy ETFs and resign from the business of managing money. Well, people like somebody to manage their money that they know and they can talk to.
Right.
And they like to beat this. They like to beat the indexes.
Right.
They don't want to match the indexes. If you're going to, I mean, I can just buy the indexes and go do a discount broker, right?
Yeah.
So you've got a story to tell internally that I think you can sell. And you're kind of a quant guy. I mean, you kind of like this.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of salesmen out there that would love to have you to sell their, you know, sell your story because they don't want to do that work. They just want to bring in more assets.
Yeah.
So you don't need to have one of those guys on your team. You can be over in Montreal and selling your stuff. Right. Doesn't sound like it's popular here, there, which is.
No, I, to be very honest with you, I've never even contemplated it. So I do have one of my clients. I have, I'm trying to think. So now Raj and your advisor, are they in the same firm?
Yeah. Okay. All these have got to be in the same firm.
The same firm. Yeah. Yeah. So I had never actually contemplated that. We've only ever done it with portfolio managers outside of the firm, right? Like, so through a separately managed account process, things like that. Never even remotely considered advertising that within the firm and capturing money from other advisors.
It's never a big deal.
Never even had a sniff, because my mind starts going like, if this is really that good, and if I can actually do it, and if it's so successful, what the fuck am I doing at giving half my revenue to BMO and Ezra Burns? I should hang my own shingle, right? That's where my mind goes.
But you don't need to do that. You got a sales force already. Because once you sign up, set up your own shingle, then, you know, then who's going to bring in the money?
Right.
You got a whole company that can go out and sell for you and bring you the money.
Yeah. Wow. No, this is cool.
I mean, this is one of the reasons Raj hired me was to work. He's got a separate financial advisor that does nothing but market internally.
Right.
He's got a marketing guy.
So how do I spell Raj's? How do I learn more about Raj?
R-A-J-B-H-A-T-I-A.
Bhatia. B-H-A-T-I-A.
So look him up on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And he's
Would you be willing to introduce me to Raj?
Sure.
Just throw an email out or whatever it might be. And, cause I'd be really interested in hearing about that. Cause this is, and maybe I'm just in a bubble. Maybe me being in small town small city Saskatchewan in the center of the province. Maybe I'm missing the forest for the weeds, but, I would love to learn more about that.
Yeah, it's a popular thing. There was a guy named Dave Malik who probably was the first guy, you know, 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, 20 years ago, I'd say. 30 years ago. That Dave Malik, he started the Malik system. And what it was, he had three different portfolios that he ran. And He studied Merrill Lynch's research, and what he found was that Merrill Lynch's research was fabulous at certain things and not very good at other things. So they were very good at predicting earnings increases. And the stocks correlated very well, performance correlated very well to two quarters of earning estimates increasing. So if an analyst increased their earnings estimates two quarters in a row, he would buy the stock. And if they decreased it one quarter, he'd sell it. So he had the first really buy-sell discipline of a FA out there. Now, people had but they couldn't quite tell you why they sold or why they bought. They just,
right.
I got it, you know. He quantified it, and he started, and we all followed his model, and I invested, you know, money based on my FA's interpretation of what he was putting out. So he had the Malik list, they had a dividend, they had a growth portfolio, dividend and growth, and so forth. And it was terrific. I mean, now Raj followed it, but he saw holes in it and has developed, he's got something called EVA, economic value, that he adds on to the quant analysis. And he thinks that basically is the secret sauce, that piece where he can actually tell you why SAP hasn't performed and another consulting firm has performed. And he calls that the economic value, and he shows it, and it's really real earnings versus accounting earnings.
Right.
So Amazon never showed real earnings, accounting earnings, you know, but they had plenty of cash flow that they could have turned into real earnings at any time but they were reinvesting so much. So he could capture that and invest in it, and then it became real earnings. So it's very interesting, and he can explain it a lot better than I can. But anyway, the idea is it, look, you get something that works, and it works over time, and you stick to the discipline, you're going to be able to sell 100 FAs that have zero interest in doing what you're doing, but want to hire somebody other than a money manager that they can never talk to.
Right.
So you can talk to clients, you can run through that, you can show them how you do it, and you're a real human being. Now, I think you still need to work on your background. But
come on now. This is my office, Fort Rob. That's great.
You've improved it. It's not. It doesn't look like,
you know, I got blue styrofoam rigid insulation now.
Right.
And,
it doesn't look like a cellar. You can hang a few pictures on the wall.
I put up a curtain. There's a curtain right here now.
It's perfect. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't look like a guy that's making 600 grand a year, do I?
No. No, you look like you're in a cellar.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, this is how these guys, they're always marketing, right? And so if your firm isn't doing this, it all takes advantage of human nature, which is one guy is a quant and the other one isn't, and you put them two together and you got yourself a lot of business.
Yeah.
Because these guys are dying to have some kind of performance they can sell.
Right.
And they, you know, the S&P and whatever does really well. So people go, screw it. Why do I pay you?
Right.
You know, so, you know, he charges 1% and the FA, you know, the FA is lucky to be able to charge 50 basis points, but when you've got something that works, you can charge 1%.
Yep.
So I digress from our usual conversation, but that's, I think, good. It's really actually gone to an interesting place. So
yeah,
I work with each of their separate business units, to try and help them to Matt. You know, I mean, I'm working with their team, and he's got this individual guy who I think what I'll do is I'll have you meet him. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have you meet, his designated FA for internal marketing.
Yeah. I'd just like to learn more about the idea of doing it with
yeah. Other, he'll be able to. That's his whole job. So,
right.
So he'd be happy to talk to you. And I think that it would, unless there's some kind of weird restriction on it, which I wouldn't think there would be, even Merrill,
no.
does it.
Yeah.
You know?
I can do, yeah, I know I can do shared codes with other advisors. That's not a problem. I just,
you might poke around and just call somebody that might know what and see who is anybody doing this. It's really big business. Like I said, I met an FA who's from Houston and he's got 600 FAs working, giving him business. 600.
Wow. Jesus.
So that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you can get to be the big guy without having to have one center of influence.
Right.
I'm trying.
That's really interesting.
I'm trying here, buddy.
Hey, by the way, I made some great inroads with some great COIs, man. It's good.
Did you?
I found, absolutely. Yeah. No, I did my, spent my 5 minutes and made, had some great calls and, met a guy who, is a senior partner in the ag, space, with a local, like with a national accounting firm. But, we were chatting and I was, you know, I went through how we, deal with intergenerational wealth and things like that. And he said, he actually let me know. He said, that's actually something we're lacking in is the ability to discuss and advise on intergenerational wealth. And then in the farming world right now, he said, we've got lots of intergenerational wealth being created right now. Because of these commodity prices. Yeah.
Yeah. And land prices. The whole thing's gone crazy.
It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
well, when I ask what's on your mind, that's what you're supposed to say.
Okay.
No.
But I like the way this went, Rob. I really do. This is good.
Well, it's really interesting.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike Pollard is the guy. So I'll introduce you guys and I'll have him explain it one more time. I've heard it about 6 times, but I still can't explain it. And if I can't explain it, then I got to get so that I can explain it, you know?
Right.
It's
And
Raj is probably the smartest guy I've ever known. And he gets a little cerebral in this presentation. It's like,
I'm sorry.
I don't know what you're talking
about. I love cerebral.
Anyway. Well, we got to go.
One thing you should know, Rob. Yeah, we got to go. I just want to let you know, I did add 2 things here to my, my business plan. One says increase visibility without discomfort because you mentioned that to me and absolutely that makes sense. And then on the other thing where I track my revenue, I have a highlighted line that says be as proud of business building and building process as you are as service process. So I have those 2 lines from you. They remind me every day when I look at this stuff. So it's going to get better. Thanks, bud.
Awesome. Great.
Have a great rest of the day. Eric. Take care.
Cheers. Fun Bye. Call. See ya.
See ya.